This is interview number one, recorded with Eleanor Glenn of the SEIU on February 7, 1986. This interview is being conducted by Sherna Gluck in Eleanor's home in North Hollywood. This interview is being conducted as part of a study of women in the Los Angeles labor movement, 1920 to the present. Eleanor represents the organizer in the service industries, particularly amongst hospital workers. She was a key organizer in SEIU.
Okay.
Let's start.
You want me to freshen my voice?
Then with your going on to the staff. You've been the president of the union, of the local.
I was the steward, and then the chief steward, and then I was elected president of the local. This is the National Federation of Federal Employees. After it merged with a number of city and county and Board of Education and state locals, and we became the United Public Workers Local 246. And I learned that the general manager of the union was placing an ad in the papers and was talking to other unions and to many people I knew about an opening on the staff as an organizer and a representative. So I put my bid in. I went into his office and asked him for a chance to bid for the job. And he looked at me and he said, "You can't be an organizer." And I said, "Why not?" He said, "You're a woman." I said, "So? I've been a woman for a good many years." And he said, "Well, these hospitals, which is really where we need an organizer, are sometimes 60 miles out, and you have night meetings, and you have to be out late." And I said, "Well, I'm not a member of a religious order. I'm married. I go out late, and I go out with my car, and I'm a good driver, and I want to put my bid in and have a chance." He said, "Well, if the truth be told," he said, "I think you'd make a good organizer, and I know the quality of your work, and you've helped build the union as a rank and file leader," but he said, "The members wouldn't accept you." And I said, "You mean they'd elect me to be their president, and they wouldn't have confidence in the fact that I could be an organizer representative?" He said, "I don't think they're ready for it yet. Take my word for it." I said, "Well, I can't take your word for it, but I have a compromise." I said, "Put me on probation for 90 days. Let me go to work at one of the hospitals and see how I'm accepted. If the workers feel uneasy and they don't feel that I can represent them because I'm a woman and they're concerned about the men that I have to deal with, I said, I won't fight it, and I won't fight the union, and I'll accept it." He said, "Okay," and we reached that agreement. So we went out to a hospital, one of the hospitals, Rancho Los Amigos, and which is out in Downey. And he opened the meeting and was warmly received. He introduced me, and I knew many of them from meetings. I was their president, so they knew me. And was very warm and encouraging until he announced the plan that he would no longer service them and that I would be their organizer and representative. And the collective faces fell right to their knees or their ankles, men and women. They were not overjoyed. As a matter of fact, some of the men openly said that it's not appropriate because they wanted representatives who could be just as heavy as the their bosses, who were primarily male, and I'd have to meet with the Board of Supervisors and the Civil Service Commission and the head of the hospital. And I said to them, "I understand your fears because it hasn't been done yet. You had confidence in me as your president, and you've reelected me, so that means you do have confidence in me. And I think the only way I could convince you that I can hold my own with the employers and the bosses and the supervisors and downtown or the Board of Supervisors is by showing it rather than talking about it and telling you how wonderful I am." I have the opportunity now to work the 90 days to get a probationary period. Now, you have 6 months. This is only 3 months. So would you give me the chance to prove myself or disprove myself? And if you still feel the same way after it's over, there won't be any problem. I'm not going to fight you on it. So they agreed unanimously.
And now, what was the composition of the workforce at that point?
Well, at Rancho Los Amigos, it was a unique hospital in the chain. It was a little bit like all of you in that the people who worked there had an opportunity to also have a residence there. There were rooms that were and cottages that were allowed on the ground for them to live in at a reduced rate. Others lived in the community. So it was a very tight-knit kind of a family atmosphere. It was 90% or more Caucasian and a few black workers as some of them were custodians, some of them worked in the kitchen, but there were very, very few black workers. And some of them lived on the ground.
And what proportion men and women?
It was overwhelmingly women. These are hospital workers. In any hospital, you'll find the overwhelming number are women.
And did this, how high up the scale did this go? This did not include, at this point, were the RNs included?
No, at this point, RNs were not unionized. It went up as far as lab technicians, and just about that, that was about the high step, and it went in terms of economic terms. It also went represented primarily hospital attendants, licensed vocational nurses, kitchen workers, laundry workers, custodians, sewing operators, etc.
And what year was this? That
this was. This was 1945 or 46. 45.
Oh, that
46.
Early. Okay.
Yes.
So it was before, it was just shortly after the war then.
That's right.
I see. Okay.
That's right.
And how did you have to step down as the president once you went on staff?
Yes.
So even before the 30 days.
The 90 days.
The 90 days, you were going to obviously have to step down.
Right.
Okay.
And that's the best of my ability to recall. I was not the president while I was a staff member, no.
Now, so you started in this 90-day period. Your job was going to be to organize.
And to organize at Rancho and represent them on grievances. Mm-hmm. I was an organizer and a representative. And there was no grievance procedure. There was no law that which laid out the guidelines. There was nothing in existence to give us the right to do what we did. And what we did is we organized. I organized by department. And I didn't do it myself. We had stewards, and we did it in a classical way of in-plan committees that later on got written into books. We were the example for it. It was Peter McGuire, who was the great-nephew of the originator of Labor Day, Peter McGuire, who was the chief organizer and he was from the South, he was Caucasian, and he believed in unions like a religion. And there were some wonderful women from the South and the Southwest, from Texas, from Arkansas, and many Texans who felt that this was the other family to protect them against being alone and vulnerable.
Now, what were the issues both around what you organized and that were the source of grievances?
Well, in order to organize, you have to be able to communicate with people and listen to what their problems are. They were different than the problems that one would expect. They were not just problems of not enough money. That was, of course, a primary concern and a basic, most basic concern. But in addition to the question of money and how we could represent them with the Board of Supervisors, without any kind of collective bargaining machinery set up, they knew that it would have to be by strength, and strength to them was being affiliated with the CIO at that time, because the auto workers and the steel plants and the auto plants were near them. The shipyards were near them. They understood the power of unions, these people. They were under no illusions that they're going to become hospital directors. So the grievances were grievances at work. It was workload. It was the injuries to their backs, the terrible, terrible working day, the lack of dignity with which they were treated. For instance, the single men could not sit at the table with a married couple or an unmarried, well, with a married couple. The singles had to sit at different tables. And if you wanted to discuss, not romance, but you wanted to see a friend of yours and they were married and you wanted to sit at their table for lunch, you could not do that. The dietitian ruled who could sit where. It was like a kindergarten room. And that bugged everybody. In the back of that room was the one table that blacks sat at. Now, these people were from the South, the whites. And I said to them, frankly, you have a grievance about not being able to sit where you wish to sit. After all, we're not the Shakers community, and it's unbelievable. Let's take up that grievance first. Everybody has agreed. This is a union meeting. I said, let it also be understood that we're breaking down all bars so that black, your black brothers and sisters, married, unmarried, could sit wherever they want to sit. And everybody accepted it immediately.
There was no resistance?
There was no resistance because there was there were so few blacks. They had known them over a period of 20 years. Mm-hmm. There was a friendly, non-hostile mm-hmm. relationship with them. However, it existed because I'm sure in the minds of some of the employees, the blacks knew, in quotes, knew their place. Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting thing was the blacks were very fearful of what might happen if there was hostility and it would break up this thin ice of good communications when the basic question of race discrimination mm-hmm. came up. And they had good reason to be concerned about that because Downey and Norwalk were not places of terrific integration, I might say. However, the workers saw the equity factor in this because they were so interested. Mm-hmm. The leaders were very interested, and the workers felt constrained. Now, I also might tell you that Rancho had the best dining room in the of all the county hospitals. Had the best food, the best menu, and the served in the most pleasant way, and with tablecloths and flowers on the table, not like the jail type. Eating dining halls that in some of the other hospitals. Rancho Los Amigos and all of you had were considered to have the two best dietitians in dining rooms. So a grievance about that department was the first time anyone had ever brought up a grievance. And this was a weighty one, so it was geared to the head of the hospital. Now, this hospital had once been the county poor farm. People had been there, some of the patients had been there for 20 years. Mm-hmm. So the relationship between the patients and the staff was very close. They were neighbors. They used to live next door to each other. They knew each other. And the director, Mr. Harriman, ran it as a paternalistic, in a paternalistic way. And to have a union grievance committee come before him gave him the biggest shock of his life. And he called down to the board of supervisors, and there was a whole huddle, and they had to get the top county administration to say, well, find out what's wrong and what's going on.
And how many of you went in to the meeting?
We had about five or six of us, men and women. And when we got into the meeting, one of the things that the administration said, well, you realize if we do, we're not telling you we're going to do this. First, we took it to the dietitian, which she would have nothing to do with it, and she practically kicked us out of her office. Dietitians are famous for this, by the way. They are more difficult to deal with than the head of the hospital, always. And one of the first things that he said to us was, you realize that if this is done, then all bars are down. And he looked at them over his glasses, and you know what I mean. Everybody can sit anywhere they want to. And everybody in the committee said yes. I can't remember now whether we had one of the black brothers or sisters on the committee. I don't think they wanted to come. We invited them, and I think they'd prefer not to be on that first committee meeting.
Were any of them stewards?
We had a steward, and 90% of them were members of the mm-hmm. union. They understood the need for unions. They were happy the union came in. And they were devoted, dedicated union members and participated in everything. And were later, of course, there were many more blacks hired, and we had union stewards who were black. And the leadership of this hospital later on were black.
Mm-hmm.
And black women who became heads of Rancho. Rancho was not the only place, though. Well, I had my assignment in two places. One was Rancho Los Amigos, and one was where the origin of the Union was established, and that is in the General Hospital, which is called the Medical Center.
Oh, so even during these 90 days, your assignment was also...
Oh, yes.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
I see.
Now, in the General Hospital, there were other organizers there as well, and representatives mm-hmm. as well. I immediately did not handle grievances there. I was organizing, and I hit a very good pace in organizing. The place was crying for it. The discrimination...
Can I back up a second, Eleanor, in terms of the grievance at Rancho?
When I'd see them and come out there several times a week, they'd say, "Where's Sam?" Sam Berline was the general manager who had turned it over to me, and I used to say, "Well, he'll come later on." Finally, at the end of 90 days, and we had one together, several grievances that had been longstanding, and they found out that by getting together and being militant and speaking not only to each other, but speaking to the employers, mm-hmm. Speaking to the bosses and the supervisors, with the help of the union and the backing of the CIO, it changed the picture.
Now, on this first grievance, you went into the meeting, and he then attempted to appeal to their racism, which they didn't buy.
Correct.
And then was he able to make the decision?
Oh, yes.
Or did he have to go higher in order to implement it?
No, he didn't have to go higher. That was a local situation mm-hmm. For him to handle, and he handled it.
Did he tell you that day he was going to do it?
No. No, we didn't know what he was going to do, and he didn't feel it necessary to tell us. And what he did was he saw to it that it was put into place.
Was it fairly immediate?
Immediate.
Uh-huh.
It was very immediate. And I also let him know that this was a community of community interest, and that we were having a meeting. We were planning to have a meeting with the NAACP and with the CIO Council.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew that it wasn't just a group of malcontents, but he knew that these white Southerners and Westerners were backing that, and he knew that in back of the union stood the steel workers and the water workers
uh-huh.
and the rubber workers who were all in the neighborhoods and so forth, and he made the right decision.
Now, do you remember what some of the other grievances were in that this very first?
Well, there were grievances on favoritism and assignment of rooms. Why somebody was continually be denied that. There were grievances on somebody getting told to go home because there wasn't enough work that day, and that meant that they weren't living up to the county conditions, which is that you're hired on a monthly basis. We had cases of reclassification, but that takes a long
mm-hmm.
time, and you don't win that immediately. You have to go through the civil service procedure. We found out that some people who were supposed to have gotten the pay raise never got it, and when they went into the payroll people who were their friends and neighbors said, "Gee, I was sorry, but we don't seem to be able to handle it." And they turned it over to the union, and we went in to see her, and she was unable to correct it, so we contacted the downtown payroll office and told them we were going to bring a whole group of workers down there to see if we can help them. And failing that, we'd go to the CIO Council and
mm-hmm.
have them help.
So you always had that as your club, ultimately.
The power of the affiliation with the CIO was an immediate source of power for the workers
mm-hmm.
who had nothing else to go on. They didn't have a union contract. That was what was so attractive about joining first the union, so
mm-hmm.
they weren't alone. Then the union was affiliated with another body, and that body was a large body. And that gave the workers
mm-hmm.
the confidence to bring up the grievance,
mm-hmm.
and it also helped us win them. If we were right,
yeah.
If we were wrong, we didn't get it.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Is in this
we lost some
period,
too.
During this your 90-day trial period, did you win all the grievances?
Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
You never win 100% of your grievances, but we won an extraordinary percentage for two reasons. Not, of course, only because we're so brilliant and we were so skilled, we really weren't. Or that we knew everything in the book of how to handle grievances, we certainly didn't. But I think the grievances were on equity questions, primarily. And any kind of an outside impartial arbitrator, they didn't have arbitration, would have decided for us. And they knew we weren't going to, if we lost it, we weren't going to let it stay there as other grievances, individual grievances mm-hmm. had been handled, that we were going to take the other steps. They had seen us march in front of the general hospital. They knew that we had connections with the board of supervisors, that we appeared before them regularly. And so they had respect for that. And they knew they couldn't continue to do what they had done before. Now, this was as true in the general hospital, mm-hmm. where the working conditions were far worse. Mm-hmm. The exploitation was far worse. The sex and primarily the race discrimination was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. So, well, let's move on to this. Now, during this 90 days, you were both at Rancho and the general hospital.
Yes, but let me tell you this. Mm-hmm. At the end of 90 days, I told the meeting preceding that, I told the assembled group that Sam Berland, the general manager, would come out, and that was the time they could do what they knew they had to do. And they looked at me, and somebody said, "Who's Sam?" And that was uh-huh. it. I got a vote of confidence unanimously from the assembled group, and from then on out, that was one of my assignments.
Uh-huh. So your responsibility, though, from the beginning was both Rancho and General Hospital.
And all of you.
Oh, okay. All right, so you're now on as a permanent staff member.
I'm on as a permanent staff member and Harbor General Hospital.
Okay. Now, describe for me the setup at General Hospital in terms, because you said there were other representatives there. Now, were they from other unions or from that same local?
No, from the same local. Mm-hmm. And the union had begun, actually, shortly before I had been hired on the staff. And it was begun by a black worker, custodian, Lembrick Belfry, and a Caucasian medical social worker, Ion Wheeler, who subsequently became a state official in social work, who, over a lunch table, were so outraged by what was going on at the General Hospital, the corruption, the mistreatment of patients, the exploitation of the workers, the denial of their rights, the imperial head of the hospital director, that Leroy Bruce was his name, the anti-union, anti-black attitudes that he displayed towards them, their powerlessness was so obvious to them that these two workers and their colleagues decided to call in a union and become organized, and they chose our union, and we went in there to organize them.
I see. Okay.
The hospital has several hospitals in it. They had a women's hospital and a psychiatric hospital, and they had a children's hospital. These were separate buildings that were 100 or 150 years of age, and they had porches which patients slept if they had tuberculosis. They had then they had the large building that was built in the 1930s. 99%, probably 100%, but I always hesitate to use that number, of the supervisory staff were white. 80, now these are not mm-hmm. fixed figures, you can check them in those days. I would say 80%, 70 to 80% of the staff was black. They were black, and this is the General Hospital, probably 80%, because a community struggle had taken place, led by Carlotta Bass, who was the publisher of the California Eagle, to make the hospital hire blacks. And it was done because it was the wartime and because President Roosevelt had laid out the non-discrimination mm-hmm. executive order. So there was a county hospital who had the majority of the patients were black, and originally the majority of the employees were white. And after the struggle by the community, with President Roosevelt in on it and knowing about it and so forth, and the governor, everybody was involved in that struggle by the black community, they finally capitulated and started to during the period of the war, they started to hire blacks. By the time I came on the scene, it was overwhelmingly black. And the discrimination was unbelievable. You got promoted if you brought a ham to the laundry supervisor. The workers were sent out on personal errands to pick up their shoes at the cobblers, at the shoemakers. The numbers game was going on all over the place. There was no equity in who got promoted and what your classification was. If there was a pay raise paternalistically given by the Board of Supervisors, they could get it or they couldn't get it.
Oh, so they were not necessarily classed. Everything was individually.
Well, I don't mean that. I don't mean to suggest that an individual supervisor decided how much a worker would get. No. Wasn't that bad. But sometimes the dictates of the Board of Supervisors did not get carried out by the lower echelon or the higher echelon. But there was no place for a black employee to go. The upward mobility was absolutely rigid, and the hierarchy was solidly Caucasian, and there were practically no Hispanic employees and no Asians.
And again, it was predominantly women.
Predominantly women. Attendants and licensed vocational nurses, which later developed, and laundry workers and
now,
kitchen workers.
There was a social worker who was in on the founding, in the sense of requesting that the union come in. Did they then, at that point, organize the professional staff also organized?
Yes. What we did, without knowing really too much about the what is now readily available in a book on how to organize. In those days, we did it in a very classical way, which now is the way you do it. The kitchen steward organized in the kitchen, but we laid out a campaign because the hospital was crying to be organized. What we would do as an organizer, myself and somebody else who was involved, one or two other people were involved briefly, but I had to finally, in a very short time, had the major responsibility for it. And myself, I represented all the hospitals. I had to go into the psychiatric hospital, I had to go into the children's hospital, I had to go into the pediatric and to the main. Thousands of people worked there. And I'd go through the lunch room at lunchtime. That's where you'd pick up your attendants and aides, institutional helpers, and custodians, and so forth.